Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast powered by betonline.ag, Thursday, September 28th, talking all things NFL Week 4. But Payne, before we get into the nuts and bolts and try and identify the best value-making propositions this weekend, the world lost a great man, one of your role models growing up yesterday.
Who's that? Hugh Hefner?
Hugh Hefner.
I did see a...
I mean, I figured you
Twitter
were ready.
Twitter is a great place. Someone had said something to the effect of the lotion business is going to take a major hit here.
The way I see it, it was a domino effect. Playboy goes away from any nude pictures in their magazine, and Hugh Hefner dies shortly thereafter. So it was a shift. He probably couldn't handle it. Didn't want to see the industry trend that way. So Hugh Hefner dead at the age of 91. We should all only live that long and have half the experiences that man was able to put on the books.
I'm surprised you were able to stumble upon that news. Figured you might have some type of pogo stick race in the desert or something like that.
Well, I mean, there may be another trike race in my future tonight. We have another Golden Knights, their second home preseason game. I haven't called ahead to see if they want me to try and repeat my performance. But thanks to you and some of our loyal listeners out there, they appreciated my effort that I put forth, you know, trying to make sure that I could bring Bet the Board brand some level of, I'm not going to call it validation because it's probably not what it was, but at least that represented us well by winning.
You're going to another preseason hockey game.
You know, you're in your season ticket holder. You can't let those tickets go to waste, buddy. You can't let those tickets go to waste.
What do those go for? About $3 a piece on the open market?
I think they're $1.99 right now. You can buy two. They'll throw in a beer for you, and you get in there for $10 for the preseason.
There you go.
Face value, though, for the Arizona Coyotes opener on October 10th. Going for about 3x face right now. So a hot ticket in Vegas standards. But that's enough hockey talk for today. We have plenty of football. Dave Mason will join us later on the show to talk about how successful week 3 of the National Football League season was for the books. I believe you have a contest update as we crown our third weekly winner.
Yeah. Goes by the name of Mike Azarian. He is the Bet the Board contest week 3 winner. Went 5-0. Guessed the exact score of the Monday Night Football game between Arizona and Dallas. It did come down to the third tiebreaker. Thank God. It came down to something that was skill-based related. And because he had the most wins at this point on the season compared to the other folks went 5-0 and had the perfect score of Monday Night Football, Mike Azarian is the winner.
So you think every week, if we do this for the 17 weeks of the regular season like we're planning to with our 5K football free roll, you think you're going to have to go 5-0? You think somewhere along the way somebody's going to be able to win the weekly prize going 4-1?
It's a good question. I'm going to say...
Going to need our math nerds out there to figure out like how many standard deviations it is away or how many sigma event opportunity it becomes given our 2,000-plus entrants.
I think someone's going to go 5-0 every week.
I would. I might tend to concur with that particular assessment. You know, you paint two teams that aren't going to go 5-0 well every week or even start the season that way, the Dallas Cowboys and Arizona Cardinals. What did you see Monday night between those two teams as far as what we could use going forward and what may have been kind of an outlier?
I think there's probably a good lesson to be had there in how to handicap games. That's the biggest thing that I took from that. And the reason why I didn't join the rest of the professional bettors on Arizona. And when you start to talk to a bunch of guys and they give their reasoning on why they like their game, and unfortunately, you know, doing what we do with this podcast, you end up on social media and you get to see a lot of people and their thoughts. And, you know, I tend to try to stay away from that. I don't want my opinion to be influenced. But all I heard was how banged up and how bad that Dallas secondary was. And while that was absolutely accurate, you have to figure out if the opponent is going to be able to exploit that weakness. That's the second part to the variable. Like, you can't just say, oh, this is convenient, right? I like this side, and there's a hole here. You then have to figure out if Arizona can actually do something against that secondary. And the problem is, John Brown goes out. He's your deep ball threat. He is your field spacer. Gresham, he did play, but he has cracked ribs. Carson Palmer hasn't had time all year, and that's with a healthy offensive line. So what does it look like when you're without your right tackle and your left guard? So you have to have time, you have to have weapons to actually exploit that Dallas weakness. And, you know, a little bit early on, in a play here or there, they could do that, but they couldn't consistently do it, and that's why Dallas ended up coming from behind. The biggest thing I saw from Dallas is, not in the first half, but in the second half, they were able to get the ground game going just a little bit. There were some holes there for Zeke. They started to make that a little bit of a threat, and that's when we saw Dak really start to take off in the second half. With that threat of a ground game, he became a much better passer.
And they at least showed commitment to it. I mean, they abandoned the run pretty damn quick the week before in that debacle of a game at Denver. I think you watch that contest, Arizona dominated and owned time of possession in the first quarter, but to get out of there only down 7-0, Dallas had to feel pretty fortunate with Phil Dawson missing a chip shot field goal, and it allowed them to adhere to their game plan. We know how their bread is buttered, and it's using that play action. And as you said, Dak, I mean, extremely talented throwing on the run, as we saw in that performance. I mean, hitting the deep ball to Bryce Butler a few times, opening up lanes for Zeke, and the rest was history.
I can't figure out, and I've been wondering this for a couple of years now, why Bryce Butler hasn't been used more. And for his size, he's got a nice wingspan, creates a huge target. I just can't figure out why he hasn't been implemented more. Hopefully, they continue to use him down the stretch. I will say this, though. When I was poking around a little bit here, I'm looking at these numbers, and Dak was, with this play action we were talking about, he was 6-for-6 in the second half, going to play action passes. He had a perfect passer rating with the play action pass. So, I mean, it's just vital that they get that going. And Jason Garrett, over the course of time here, he's kind of been forced, right? The offensive line's been so good, the ground game's been so good, he'd have to be an idiot not to continue to go to the ground. But there was a time there, because he was a former quarterback, because he had Tony Romo, where they would just abandon the run, and that's ingrained in him. So we did see that early on. Fortunately, someone must have woke him up a little bit and said, hey, we need to figure out the ground game. And that's when things really started to turn around in the second half.
Well, Jason Garrett and Idiot have oftentimes been mentioned in the same breath, so you would not be the first one and probably won't be the last one to do those things. But on to the games this weekend, Payne. Of course, we'll get to the Bears-Packers Thursday night showdown, the big game breakdown brought to you courtesy of the American Sports Betting Coalition towards the end of the show. We may as well start the Sunday slate across the pond for the second straight week, where it is the New Orleans Saints taking on your Miami Dolphins. New Orleans right now a 3-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game, 49.5. Payne, we know the Saints, offensive efficiency-wise, top 5 in the league. Defensive efficiency on the opposite end of the spectrum. The Dolphins, however, not extremely good offensively, not extremely good defensively. What kind of angle should we be looking at to try and find opportunity here?
We talked about those matchups, and they're both going to have favorable offensive matchups. So I would expect this probably to trend up a little bit. We'll say this. When you try to make a case for the Dolphins, there's some scary stuff there. You're talking about 13,000 miles of travel to start the season. They go from, you know, Miami to Oxnard to Carson, California, Carson to Miami, Miami to then New Jersey, Jersey to Miami, and now Miami out to London. It's a ton of travel. Defensively, that's where we saw them start to wear down last week, especially when they're on the field for 36 minutes. When you talk about what Josh McCown was able to do, carved him up a little bit. And this is, you know, I get he's a competent passer, but Josh McCown lost 27 of his prior 29 starts before last Sunday. So that's not a positive. When you talk about what might help the Dolphins this week, it's getting Timmons back. Mike Hall was filling in the middle of the field. I know he's a former Penn State legend. He had 120 snaps the last 2 weeks. He has been dreadful. He's too small, gets pushed around in the ground game. He's not quick enough to defend the middle of the field against backs and tight ends. And to paint this picture, opponents the first 2 weeks have targeted him, and they've both quarterbacks Rivers and McCown have a 134 rating to the middle of the field. Now, you're talking about that 1 to 14 yard radius. So I get Timmons is on the decline, but it's certainly an upgrade for him. You also have an acquisition that's been pretty quiet. Stephon Anthony, he was a stud coming out of Clemson. The Dolphins were actually looking to draft him if he was there in the second round. The Saints went and picked him up in the first round. Well, the Dolphins traded for him about 10 days ago. So there's a little sneaky situation there. He obviously knows what the Saints want to do. The question becomes, can they stop it? I'm not sure they can. Matt Burke, don't love him as a defensive coordinator. Very passive. And so I guarantee you when Drew Brees was looking at the film this week, he was like, man, I'm going to have a field day here. They play off the wide receivers. And that really... it turns into 7-on-7 football when you do that because Brees can get out quick. Your defensive line doesn't actually have a chance to get to the quarterback. So right now, if you're passing on Miami, 58% of those passes have graded out as successful. So Drew Brees is just chomping at the bit. The other thing you're going to want to watch here is it looks like Willie Snead is going to be back off that 3-game suspension. That's just another added weapon to the mix. He's been playing in the slot. He finished out last year as one of the best slot receivers in football. And that's going to probably hurt the Dolphins a little bit because they have trouble covering the slot.
What do we make of the travel situation? New Orleans, of course, getting out to London pretty early. You saw pictures circulating on social media. Drew Brees taking some of his teammates to the soccer match between with Arsenal on Monday. Dolphins arrived to London when, Payne?
Actually left, leaving today.
Okay.
So don't love that.
That's what I was going to say. So when you look at the number and see how it's adjusted, we talked about it on the Monday podcast. This game would have been much closer to a pick on a look ahead. Now out to 3. Has the market responded strongly enough there? Or do we think we're going to see some buyback on the Fins if we get to see 3 flat out there?
It's possible. At 3, that you're going to probably have to start making a case towards the Dolphins. I mean, this isn't the New Orleans team that's excellent by any stretch. And I think you're going to obviously have the effect in the market of what transpired last week, which was the New Orleans Saints traveling to Carolina as a 6-point dog and winning that game outright by multiple scores. And you have the Dolphins who look inept. And now you have this standalone 9:30 a.m. slot game, and the public's going to be just coming in droves on the Saints. So it's a little bit of everything here. It makes sense if you want to get out ahead of the market, lay some New Orleans, know where the market's going to take you, and come back with the Dolphins. I haven't done it yet, but I would envision there's going to be some professional money come Sunday in the Dolphins.
Be interested to hear what Dave Mason has to say about these island games if they get healthy betting handle with the early kickoff, knowing folks want to try and put their money to work for them as early as they possibly can. Once that game wraps up, you get into the early slate, and one of the more intriguing games and bigger line moves we've seen around a key number, the Los Angeles Rams on the road to take on the Dallas Cowboys. Right now, Dallas, a 6-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game, 47.5. Number opened as high as 8. We saw no resistance whatsoever going through the key number of 7. But Payne, the first question I have here, the unique scheduling quirk that would favor the Rams. They played last Thursday. Dallas not only has a short week themselves, but they play a team that's got an extra solid 4 days of prep time for this particular matchup.
You asked me about this yesterday.
I did ask you about it yesterday.
And I had someone look into it.
And what have we found? Is there anything that we can profit from, or is it absolutely just noise?
Short sample size, obviously. And I don't have the exact matchups in front of me or the teams. Obviously, you know, regardless of the spot or the situation, if there's a team going in that's, you know, a 10-point underdog, it's there's a reason they're an underdog. That said, so far the team with the... there's been 34 instances. And the team with the extra prep playing that Thursday game versus team that played the Monday game, 47.1% against the spread.
That would be a long-term losing proposition for those math wizards out there.
Well, it's not long-term, but for the NFL it is. And that's, you know, not to get too far off on the trend rant. They're tough to kind of quantify in the NFL, and they're tough to kind of apply. And just for reasons like this, the sample size is just so small here. And it's a great thought process. It would make sense. So I would listen to a trend here, but the trend apparently doesn't support it. I still think there's some relevance to it, though. And that's the difference, right? There's some trends where people are like, hey, it says this. It's got to mean this. For me, the trend doesn't say it, but I personally think there's probably some relevance to it, and the market has indicated there is, right? So that's what we've seen so far from this.
And when we look at this game, Payne, obviously the Rams have struggled, at least to the eye test, to slow down opposing running attacks. We saw Washington basically do whatever they wanted up the middle, right side, left side, and keep that Rams defense at bay. Dallas, at this point, do we think they're going to be able to run the football effectively enough? And Jared Goff, in this particular spot, does he have enough around him to keep this game within the number to warrant a move through the key number of 7 all the way down to 6?
That's always got to be the question you ask when you're trying to bet a Dallas game. Are they going to be able to establish the ground game? And well, you know, LA hasn't been as good as they have been in years past. I think, you know, you lose William Hayes, the Dolphins, great edge setting, defensive end. Donald clearly held out, wasn't fulfilling that usual snap requirement he has. So they have tailed off there. It's not horrible, though. They're still in the top half of that category in terms of defensive run success rate. When you talk about Goff, he's actually been awesome in terms of the turnaround. And he's been good in general. He's graded out the 13th best quarterback in the NFL. When you talk about last year, you're talking about historically poor. And the one thing that has really made me warm up to Goff is he is not getting any time either. The offensive line still hasn't been great. He's the quarterback that's been under the fourth most pressure. And right now, he's been awesome. Throwing the ball short, getting it out quick. And then when he does actually get time, he's been fantastic throwing it deep. I just love what McVay does offensively. It's very creative. We saw a lot of that on display this past Thursday night against San Francisco. And I know it's San Francisco's defense, but when you start talking about play design, where the play is supposed to go, where it's intended to go, I just love everything about what McVay is doing. And it's clear he is, when you see him on the sideline, that's the most fun to watch this. He's kind of just camping out, ready to for the next offensive possession when his defense is on the field. He is really giving the reins defensively to Wade Phillips. He's taking it a lot off his shoulders in year one. And he said, Wade, this is your defense. You do it. You're on the field. He'd been in the booth in years past with some of the health issues, but he's on the field now. He's basically acting as that assistant coach. And McVay is literally just hanging out there designing the plays for the next drive when the defense is on the field. So it's been pretty fun to watch.
There's a lot to be said about knowing how to identify talent both on the field and off and delegating responsibility. I would encourage people. I saw something very similar. It looked like a kid in a sandbox as he was sitting there on the side trying to scribble out plays, trying to figure out exactly what this offense was going to do. When we look at the other side of the ball and try and figure out exactly, you know, what the Rams are going to do against a Dallas secondary. I mean, you talked about some of Goff's success. Do we think it's a matchup that favors the Rams? Do they have to try and be successful running the ball to open things up for the passing game or lean on the passing game to open things up for Todd Gurley?
Yeah, I mean, I think against Dallas's defense, it's, you know, there's a lot that's going to work there. I'm not sure what McVay's going to employ. They've certainly made a concerted effort to get Gurley back going this year. You know, the yards per carry isn't quite there, but there's been, you know, much better success there. You do have to attack that Dallas secondary as much as you can, though. And as we talk about this, not to go backwards, there's your Dolphins over money.
There's your Dolphins over money amongst a few other totals getting hit at the exact same time. So under money coming in on Jacksonville and the Jets. An intriguing under money on a game that we will get to shortly. It may create a compelling discussion for us moving forward. This game, though, total as well, before we kind of move on from here, Payne, we saw it open at 46, get as high as 48 before there was some resistance. Any strong feel where this market ultimately goes in terms of Rams-Cowboys total?
No clue. There's a little battle going on there, that's for certain. Over 46 early in the week, under 48 from another group yesterday. So,
guess it'll all
no
depend
idea on, there. 47 is the key number, so...
Exactly.
We'll want to monitor that.
And who can establish their pace of play and tempo? If Dallas can put together a long drives, it puts a premium on every single possession. Titans and Texans, a showdown in the AFC South. When you look at Tennessee, a 1.5-point favorite at betonline.ag, total in this game, 43.5. Last time we saw the Texans, Payne, they had their hearts ripped out by the New England Patriots as Tom Brady marched him down the field. The Texans obviously getting the cash in that particular spot, catching 14 without much of a sweat. The Titans so far early on, it seems that they've put their offensive struggles, at least from week one, against the Raiders in the rearview mirror. This is the number two rated offense in terms of overall efficiency.
Yeah. You're talking about the Titans, correct?
Yeah, I'm talking about the Titans. I'm not. Okay. No, the Texans are not the Texans are not wowing anybody with their offensive efficiency right now.
I will say this: through 3 weeks, Malarkey Bully Ball is working for the Titans. And, you know, they're number one in success rate, and even better, they're number one in running success rate on first down. The offensive line has been a joy to watch, and they're literally tapping the opposing D lineman on the shoulder and saying, hey, we're going to run this play, and we're going to run it right up your ass. And the ball gets snapped, and sure as shit, they're running it right up their ass. It's been awesome to see on the All-22. What's concerning me is Marcus Mariota. Despite pressure being lifted off his shoulders with the fantastic ground game, he has regressed through the early part of this season. Everyone's been kind of bagging on Mike Glennon. Everyone was calling for Andy Dalton to be benched. Right now, Mariota is graded out in between those two quarterbacks, I believe 22nd overall. So there's some concern there in the passing game. Corey Davis, you're going to want to monitor that situation a little bit. When you flip to the other side of the ball and you talk about Houston's offense, I know a lot of people have been clamoring for Deshaun Watson, and it looked like he had a good game last week. He has been fantastic in terms of his elusiveness, grading out one of the best quarterbacks in that regard, but he's still turning the ball over a ton, just like he was at Clemson as a senior. There was a few last week when you put on the film, he probably should have had about four interceptions. And then you have to kind of factor it in. Who did he face last week? The Patriots defense. They have been horrific, and I am sure it is killing Belichick. Through 3 weeks, this Patriots defense is on pace, I kid you not, to be the least efficient defense since we've been tracking this since 1986. And it's not close. It is a historically bad defense through 3 weeks. So while Deshaun Watson showed some promise, made a couple nice throws, I don't know how much we can take from it.
When you look at the other side of the ball, what have you made of the Texans defense so far this season?
It's certainly the secondary is not as good. That's been a little bit concerning. In terms of run defense, still middle of the pack. They're 17th in success rate. The problem is they too get a little bullied there on first down. They take a huge step down with first down defensive success rate when the opposing teams run, and we know that's what Malarkey's going to want to do on first down. When you start to look at this a little bit, there is going to be a battle between professionals and the math guys. Okay, so there's clearly professional money on Tennessee. The math guys are going to take three with Houston here because this line's a little off when it comes to a power number. This game isn't for me. My feeling is you'd probably be able to tease this if you were so inclined in Houston's favor, and I think probably that's what we'll end up seeing if it doesn't get to three from some of the math guys. For me, I don't see much here.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Do you think we see three in the market if there's enough sharp money for Tennessee, or there will be there a kind of a point of resistance around 2.5?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of people saw that game and it was competitive, and they're thinking, hey, you know, it took a Herculean effort from Brady to beat Houston on the road. And so I think it's going to be tough for that game to fully get to three, and that becomes the debate. You know, you lose a lot of teaser value teasing through, you know, to 10. And when you see guys do that, it's simply to, you know, that side's got to be the side, right? And it's just another way to get money down. But if it's just certainly, you know, a math play here, if it doesn't get to three and they're not taking three, the teaser route is going to be the way they're going to go. I think there is a level in the locker room that's certainly happy with Watson. They see the talent. They see light at the end of the tunnel. Internally, they're probably saying, man, you know, rookie QB on the road, it really took Brady just this massive effort to beat us. I would think internally, even though they didn't win, there's a ton of confidence coming into this game.
That sometimes you can't quantify confidence, as cliche as it sounds. It should be interesting as both of these teams thought by many, the Titans obviously the pick to win the division with the odds as they close. Houston started the season a bit of a struggle against Jacksonville, but appears to have since righted the ship. This would go a long way if they're able to hold serve against a division rival at home. Two teams battling to stay out of the cellar in the AFC North. The always popular Ohio showdown between Cincinnati and Cleveland. This game paying the Bengals a 3-point favorite, lay $1.20 on the chalk. Total here 41, shaded to the over at betonline.ag. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are going, what the hell are you guys doing talking about this game? But you have seen some very real sharp money coming in the dog. This number opened as high as 4 before trending closer to a field goal.
Yeah, I think that's probably why we're talking about it a little bit. Been sharp money in both directions, on the dog and with the over. I will probably not get to the Cleveland party at this point. I think you probably have to envision, you know, we talked on Monday about Cincinnati, where they are confidence-wise, and that's going to be the big determinant here. What are they? They really gave an all-in effort against Green Bay. Player meetings, team meetings. I mean, there was just all this stuff going on internally. And to come up short, you have to wonder about confidence. But at this point, these guys are professionals, and there's going to start to be some jobs getting axed. And I would think Andy Dalton probably feels pretty confident with the offensive direction under Bill Lazor. He is much better than Zampezi, who got fired last week. And I have seen Lazor. He was in Miami. There's a real focus on getting the best players the ball. I know a lot of these guys like to outsmart themselves. And we're going to run this, and we're going to run that. That's one thing Bill Lazor isn't. Yes, he likes to run some exotic stuff, but the focus is always getting the best weapons the ball. And last week we saw that. A.J. Green, 16 targets the first two games. He has 14 against the Packers. We've been waiting for Joe Mixon to kind of get out and be that dude. Mixon has 36% of the snaps in week one, 25% of the snaps in week two. Zampezi out. Bill Lazor takes over in week three. Mixon has 56% of the snaps. Bernard, 21%. Hill, 23%. So it's going to be a lot of A.J. Green. It's going to be a lot of Joe Mixon, which is fantastic. The one thing you're going to want to monitor here, and Tony Romo has been fantastic, and he caught this right away, and it's something that I saw over time with him being down here in Miami. Bill Lazor likes to run a scripted offense. Once that script comes off, it gets a little bit dicey. And last week, Romo actually made reference. It was nuts to see how far he's digging into stuff. He's tackling this announcing job pretty well. And he said, he made this little slide remark after Cincinnati got out early. He said, man, I think the Packers are probably going to start to make some adjustments here. I'd be shocked if Cincinnati continues to have this success once the script comes off. And sure enough, as soon as the script comes off, Cincinnati has 3 points the rest of the way. So that's one thing you're probably going to want to monitor here. And that's why if you were trying to play this game, you know, Cleveland probably for the full game makes a little bit more sense once that script wears off. But for me, nothing at this point. Extremely sharp money on the over. 41 is a key number. So that's something, you know, I probably not dabbling too far at this point with the 41.5. But nothing for me on this game.
It sounds like a case can be made if the Browns face a deficit at the half, maybe playing from behind. We saw them dig themselves quite the hole last week against Indianapolis before trying to make a game of things, coming up just short. In a game where they were favored for the first time on the highway since 2014, much like then, a very similar result. From the bottom of the barrel in that division to the teams sitting atop, the Baltimore Ravens play host to the Pittsburgh Steelers. This game right now, BetOnline, seemingly stubborn, does not want to go to a field goal, so we'll call it what it is. Pittsburgh, a 2.5-point favorite late, $1.26 on the favorite. Total on this game, 42. We've obviously seen significant under money. This total opened at 45 earlier in the week, as we alluded to on the Monday podcast. You've also seen a little bit of support for Pittsburgh. I have to think when we talk to Dave later, Payne, he's going to say that there's been public money on the Steelers. But where do we go with these two teams, both coming off very disappointing efforts last weekend?
Well, this game, as we start to talk about it, is going to make me even more frustrated than I was on Monday.
Blood pressure getting going already, isn't it?
So frustrating. Total, 45, now down to 42. We'll see if that can tick back up a little bit. So there is a first half number that looks appeasing. It looks appealing. I'm so frustrated right now. All right, so, you know, when we try to make a case for a side here, you know, we've talked about Big Ben on the road, had a chance to actually quantify this. So the last three seasons, plus the two games this year, Big Ben on the road has led the Steelers to a 16-12 record. At home, 18-5 over that same stretch. Completion percentage is down about 4% on the road. Yards per pass attempt, down about 1.2 yards on the road. Ben's passer rating dips about 25 points on the road. And the biggest thing here with the home-road split that we've seen during the sample size, 64 touchdown passes to 20 interceptions at home. On the road, 28 touchdown passes to just 25 picks. So the struggle is real. It's not something that we're just, you know, kind of throwing out there like, yeah, you know, just a lazy handicap Big Ben on the road. It's real. And so the public's getting out here. There has been a little bit of sharp money on Pittsburgh, but you got to kind of start to wonder, you know, what the intent of that is. Baltimore looked horrific in London last week. You're probably going to have a little bit of a bounce back here. Their injury problem, though, is real. And that's what concerns me just a little bit. But when you're starting to talk about these home-road splits, Baltimore is just, it's the inverse. At home, they are fantastic. On the road, they are poor. So it's tough to really quantify. When you start to quantify it, you're like, man, I have to make this massive adjustment here, and it doesn't feel right because you don't want to make that much of adjustment, but it's real. When you start to talk, you know, not too far back into this total, so it doesn't piss me off, but the pace, Baltimore, 29th in pace, Pittsburgh, 23rd. Talk about the last nine meetings in Baltimore, they've all gone under. There's just that familiarity. These two teams hate each other. So that's kind of where I'm at with this game. I don't have anything on it right now, and I'd like to move on so I don't throw microphone.
Well, I'm going to ask you one more question before you throw the microphone in. And we do love the passion pain. I mean,
people. I don't know where the total's going if you're going
to
ask me that.
No, it has nothing to do with the total. I was going to ask you about the off-field bullshit that's going on with the Pittsburgh Steelers and how you try and factor that into handicapping a particular side.
You set me up again here. Or you just kind of throw it up. You set me up again. Clearly, when your focus isn't on football, it can have a negative impact on football. That's what I'm going to say.
That is one hell of a rant, buddy. It's one hell of a rant to try and take that in a number of directions. You know what's even better? It's the perfect segue into another rant that we're going to get here because we're going to talk about the Chargers again. The Los Angeles Chargers playing at home against the Philadelphia Eagles. The Chargers a one-point favorite. Lay $1.15 on the favorite. Total in this game holding steady at 47.5. Fortunately, in this game, Anthony Lynn may not be up against a coaching mastermind in the form of Andy Reid. He gets Andy Reid's disciple in Doug Peterson, hopefully leveling the playing field for San Diego to get off the schneid.
Two questions here. Can Philip Rivers be better?
For me or in general?
No, just in general, I think.
Okay.
You got to ask yourself, is Philip Rivers going to be better? And right now, I think a lot of the offensive struggles are on him. We know the offensive line isn't providing a ton of running lanes for Gordon, but when it comes to Rivers, you know, they've afforded him the fifth most time to throw without pressure. And against the Chiefs, we talked about this on Monday. Without pressure, Rivers delivered a 44 passer rating. That has to be better. And if it is, you know, the Chargers are going to have some success here. They're going to score some points against an Eagles secondary that isn't very good and isn't very healthy. The second thing is, can Anthony Lynn and Rivers get on the same page? We saw some tension there late in the game. And I would agree. I would be frustrated if I was Rivers because the game plan doesn't appear to be conducive to success. You're just kind of ramming the ball into the line of scrimmage on obvious rundowns, and that's doing two things. Putting pressure on an offensive line that isn't great, run blocking to begin with, and it's forcing Rivers to really pull this rabbit out of the hat. On second and long, third and long, the weapons in San Diego are there, and they kind of really complement each other when you start to break down all their skill sets. And then the other thing here, when I started to really dive into this. And it's somewhat subjective. I like to think our power rankings are good and our valuations for home field are good. At plus one in Pick'em where this opened, it's really the first time the lack of home field advantage was not properly valued by books and maybe even discounted, right? The first couple of weeks, there's too much home field advantage being, I think, accounted for in those lines. At that opener, there actually might have, you know, it's been talked about so much in these betting circles. And you know, when we're talking about it on podcasts, like I think, you know, people aren't stupid. They kind of know who knows what they're talking about and who doesn't. So this is the first time I think it's actually been too discounted. I think there's certainly some home field advantage. And it might not just be on the field itself, but when you talk about the travel, right, and you talk about the spot and, you know, Philadelphia having that walk-off 61-yard winner at the buzzer, now you're traveling across the country. There's still going to be about a 60-40 split here of Chargers fans. There's still an environment where they've played there before, and it's going to be Philadelphia's first time. So you do have to give it some home field advantage. And again, this is the first time I haven't seen. I've actually seen some, you know, almost flatline home field advantage and you know, none at all. There's still probably about a point worth.
Philadelphia making their third road trip the first 4 weeks of the season. We know they were successful in their jaunt to Washington, came up on the short end of the stick against Kansas City. You mentioned Philip Rivers and some of his struggles, Payne. I mean, everyone talks about him being a top-tier quarterback, but you look at his win-loss record over the last 30-some-odd games, and it's not very good. How much of that falls on Rivers versus falls on his surrounding supporting cast, whether it be coaching staff, defensively, or some of the other players on the offensive side of the ball with him?
Well, he's a Hall of Famer, and that's probably not going to be questioned. I think when you start to look at the injuries that have piled up during that stretch, they've been a team that's, you know, been in the top tier of starts missed by players. I think the coaching has been less than ideal, especially when you're talking about Anthony Lynn, especially when you're talking about a few of those past coaches that have been there, probably better coordinators than head coaches. So I think he's been dealing with a lot. And when you start to talk about, you know, just kind of shooting the crap with buddies or Giants fans or things of that ilk, I know Eli's got the rings. There's just a huge contingency of smart guys, of even Giants fans, to say, man, well, probably would have won a little bit more with some of those defenses we had if Philip Rivers was our quarterback. So I think there's just a frustration level, and we kind of saw it come out on the field. You know, when you're starting to deal with, it's 2017, it's 2018. You have to get coaches the right information. And when you're punting on 3rd and 9 from the opponent's 34, you can see why the frustration is starting to boil over for Philip Rivers. And so certainly some of it's on his shoulders. I think the overall mentality, though, as well, right? When you're a team that loses and you're the quarterback, you feel you have to overcompensate. And that's the reason why a lot of his interceptions transpire.
Young Koo, apparently no confidence from Anthony Lynn and his kicker to bang field goals from 50-plus yards. So the Chargers, definitely interesting, as we've seen this number go from pick and plus one into the Chargers, a short home favorite. Other two teams in the AFC West that'll be taking to the field on Sunday, the Oakland Raiders and the Denver Broncos. Denver, a three-point favorite at BetOnline, lay $1.05 on the favorite. Total on this game has actually been bet down since we started the podcast, from 47.5 at the peak down to 46. Payne, I'm not surprised that the Raiders struggled in Washington on Sunday. I was surprised that that offense looked absolutely pathetic against the Redskins defense that I know is improved, but still not going to be confused with the Purple People Eaters or the Steel Curtain anytime soon.
Similar to that college basketball theory, the 25-5 rule, where throughout the course of the season, you're going to play, you know, 20 games true to who you are as a team, 5 games above, 5 games below. It was an awful spot for Oakland. It was an absolute no-show. Lots of shoddy effort if you go back and throw on the All-22. So offensively, I'm throwing out that performance, although in general, I am keeping a close eye on Carr, who has not been great the first 3 weeks. I know he's dealing with a lot of drops, but he's had all the time in the world to throw, and he's underachieving a bit so far. But what I'm not going to throw out is that miserable Oakland defense. That has got to improve.
We've been saying this for over a season that they had to improve, and they've done nothing to really address that.
It's gotten worse. It's actually gotten worse. And so, you know, when your head coach is a defensive guy, you know, got to start figuring that out a little bit. They are not going to make a legitimate Super Bowl run if they cannot be better. And you just start to just rattle off all these metrics. 25th in success rate run defense, 27th against the pass. And, you know, you start to dig in. They have led in 2 of the first 3 games, and they've done so by double digits. And yet the defensive line, just 24th in adjusted sack rate. The opponent knows you want to come up the field. The game dictates that you're going to be able to just rush up the field unabated, don't have to worry about the run, yet you can't get to the quarterback. I don't know what's going on there defensively. It's pretty scary there. When you talk about Denver, if they can establish the ground game, they're gonna, you know, they're gonna be okay in this situation, and they've been able to do that so far this season. Fourth in rushing success rate, so there is an edge there. So far, that addition that we talked about in the preseason podcast, Ronald Leary from Dallas in the offseason, you spent that first round pick on Bowles at left tackle. Both of those have paid huge dividends. The key with the Broncos is Simeon. And I hate to even say this, but it's accurate. It's the most accurate depiction I can come up with. He's got to stop treating the freaking football like a used prophylactic. Like, I mean, there's just no sense of what he's doing with the football. He's got 6 touchdowns. He's got 6 turnovers. And when you start to really break this down, I mean, he could have about 3 or 4 more. There should have been a pick 6 to start the Chargers game, Casey Howard. He is moving the ball. He looks competent from the shotgun. They are very successful passing the ball, top 10 in that regard. He just has to stop turning it over. I can't figure it out because he's a smart guy. Like, he went to Northwestern. Just eat it sometimes. And he's not doing that, and that's what's going to really prevent them from being really, really good.
I know a lot of people see the score last week and go, well, Denver clearly played down a little bit, but digging in, I mean, yardage-wise, they outgained Buffalo and probably outclassed the Bills for extended stretches. We know Von Miller came out, apologized for a penalty that proved to be very costly, but I think Denver much better than that final scoreline indicated. We saw this number open under a field goal, tick out to a field goal. Where do we think the side and total could potentially close as we get closer to Sunday kickoff?
I'm not quite sure. I was hoping for a total that was a bit lower, like we typically see in Denver home games. I figured potentially a lot of people, bookmakers, would have seen Carr struggling a little bit, and we would have gotten this in the lower to mid-40s. At 46.5, I wasn't running to bet the over. We will see where this goes. I would assume, if this continues to trend down a little bit, we might see it tick back up a little bit. I have no idea. In terms of the side, a lot of public money early in the week on Denver. Some professional money getting out ahead of that market, taking the money line. And that's the one thing. When you saw this open 1.5, 2, professional bettors are going to just look at the market, and it's going to paint a picture. Where is this line going? We look at it as the 425 game. It's probably the best game of that batch, so that's where the public's going to gravitate. Get out ahead, but take that money line so it affords you a little bit more luxury later on in the week, because it becomes easy. If I can lay money line on Denver and take 3 on Oakland, long term, that's going to be profitable.
One last game on Sunday, and I don't want to spend a lot of time with it because I don't think we've really done deep dives any time over the last couple of years into games with 13 or 14 point numbers out there. Seattle, Sunday Night Football, 13-point home favorite against the Indianapolis Colts. Total on that game, 41.5 at betonline.ag. We hear it all the time, old school guys, so you take double digits almost no matter what in a lot of these matchups. I have a feeling there could be a different psychology and mindset as it pertains to which way the professionals may come down on this one.
You know, Jacoby Brissett's been fantastic. He's really given Indianapolis at least a fighting chance. It could be ugly here. And, Russell Wilson looked fantastic last week. You start to dig in a little bit, though. He's still missing a lot of throws. And there's no excuse for some of them. When you start to back out the plays where he's got time to throw, he missed about 4 or 5 last week. And he needs to be better in that regard. If he can be, the offense gets a little bit more explosive. I know they were really trying to establish that ground game. I know Carson's kind of developed as their horse, but all 4 backs were active last week, and we hadn't seen that in previous weeks. Eddie Lacy was out. So it kind of tipped off to saying, hey, they're going to try to start this game on the ground, and we saw a very slow starting first half. It didn't turn out to be that full game, but that was kind of the agenda there, is try to get that ground game going. They'll probably try to do that again this week. The total feels a touch light. I would think that maybe trends up a little bit, but for me at this point, like you, I'm probably going to go the dinosaur method here and not be able to lay close to 2 touchdowns with the total in the low 40s.
No, it'll keep me on the sidelines for sure. Again, not a game that we wanted to spend a lot of time on, but doing our due diligence to pay attention to these island football games that I know a lot of our loyal listeners will try and invest in, even if it's for recreational purposes. There is one more game on the slate.
Speaking of that.
Go ahead, fire away.
I didn't realize, and you kind of made a point to this last week, and I started, my timeline started flooding with this. I didn't realize that a lot of these guys weren't just betting the actual game we give out.
No, as we've come to find out, a lot of our loyal
listeners... Lots of assuming, lots of reading between the lines, lots of...
Our guys out there know that if...
Hearing what they want to hear.
Exactly. It's amazing the storylines that get created. So while we love it that you guys hang on every single word as we try and tip our hand as to where the market's going and some of the angles that might be worth exploring, remember, tread at your own peril for a lot of the games. We do try and give out our strongest investment advice at the end of every episode or on the blog. So
or the dumbest, potentially, this week.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very good point. I don't think we want to tip our hand with where we're going this week. We'll get to that. We'll get to that shortly. And as I said, Green Bay and Chicago, we haven't forgotten about that game. But we do have a man waiting in the wings for his weekly interview. We welcome in Dave Mason like we do every Thursday here on the Bet the Board podcast. You can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. And Dave, I have to ask, are you finally done gloating over what I imagine was a massive haul for the house last Sunday in the National Football League?
Not yet. Tonight, when the game kicks off for Thursday Night Football, then it's get time to forget about week three. But no, it was a great weekend. It was a record-setting weekend. And like I said last week, the week before, what didn't really go our way. The players took it to us a bit. So, you know, we got that money back and then some this past weekend. Started out great with that 49ers cover, and it just went all the way through the weekend up until Monday night. The players won Monday night, but yeah, it was a record weekend. It was, I mean, not only college was good, like I said yesterday, but NFL just blew it out of the water. I mean, we won more on NFL Sunday, almost two times as much as our previous record win. So, you know, thanks to the 49ers, Jaguars, Bills, Bears, Vikings, Texans, Bengals, Jets, and that Skins game was a record setter for a regular season game. Those are all big winners, not just like moderate winners. I'm talking big winners. Players, Falcons, and Chiefs were big, and the Cowboys Monday night, like I said.
Payne, we're gonna have to remember this clip. We're gonna have to cut it. So when Dave comes on here crying foul about how like the Patriots beat their brains in like week 12 during the season, we'll be able to play this back. So no one is going to feel sympathy when those little violins start to come out.
Nobody feels sad for him. Nobody. You should just beat him up. Just beat him up. That's get your money in there and beat him up. Dave, as we transition to week four, talk to us a little bit where the public's looking early in the week, where the professionals are looking.
Yeah, well, week four, it's gonna, as usual, there's a lot of lopsided action coming in. Starts tonight. We will be huge Bears fans as 79% of the early bettors are on the Packers. Continues into Sunday. It's the three biggest as of now. The Saints against your Dolphins, 75% of the bets are on the Saints. The Jaguars, look at that. People are betting the Jaguars. 79% of the bets are on the Jaguars over the Jets. And the Steelers, 74% of the bets are on the Steelers at the Ravens. That road chalk again.
Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I was just going to get into sharp action. I'm sure that was the next question. Bears plus 7.5 tonight. That's currently 7. Patriots over 47.5. That's now 48.5. The under tonight, 45.5. That's now down to 44.5. Jets plus 3.5. That's plus 3. Chargers a pick. They're now minus 1. Pittsburgh minus 2. They're minus 2.5, minus 126. So that's some of the sharper stuff.
When you look, Dave, at games like we have this coming weekend with that standalone time slot on Sunday, that's usually a pretty healthy handle for you, like Baltimore and Jacksonville last week. Does that game get you guys going in the right direction in terms of getting bettors out of bed?
Absolutely. I mean, that you know, that game last week, Jaguars-Ravens, I mean, there was so much action on that. They're probably twice the action it would be if it was during a regular 1 o'clock time slot. So, you know, we expect the same for Saints Dolphins. It will get, you know, probably around two times the action it would get later. So it gets everybody out, gets everybody betting. We either start our day up or we start our way down. Last weekend, we started our day way up as the Jaguars are one of our biggest needs of the day. So, no, it's great. We love it. You know, we love it. Just any of those standalone games, I mean, there's just so much more action coming in on it. So if we had it our way, there'd be a primetime game every night of the week.
I think you might be able to talk to Roger Goodell into it with the influx of product out there and the saturation of the market. Maybe get a little Wednesday night football, roll it into Friday to try and create some content. You did mention, though, obviously the house had a pretty big weekend, so I'm sure, unfortunately, there are some listeners out there that do need to reload going into this weekend. What kind of promotions are available for Bet the Board this weekend?
Yes, sir. Go over to betonline.ag and sign up with an account if you do not already have one. Use promo code 75BTB for one-time 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account and have not taken advantage of the Bet the Board reload bonus yet, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload bonus. The maximum bonus on each is $1,000. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
Dave, always a pleasure. Good to hear you in a chipper mood when you took everybody's money over the weekend. We know the public will get it back at some point. It's not a question of if, but rather when. Good luck again this weekend. Hopefully you guys start things off with a bang tonight if you can get the dog to get to the window for you.
All right, fellas. Thank you very much.
Dave in an awfully chipper mood paint after the house cleaned up on Sunday.
Winning changes a man.
It does, but in this business, you're only as good as your last winner. So unfortunately for the folks at Bet Online, they gave some of that back on Monday night. We'll see what this weekend has in store for them. As we heard Dave say, clearly they're going to be big Bears fans later this evening. And as always here on the Bet the Board podcast, the big game breakdown comes to you courtesy of the American Sports Betting Coalition. Nearly 6 in 10 Americans are in favor of ending the federal sports betting ban, and 72% of avid sports fans believe that should be done away with. Additionally, nearly 2 in 3 Americans believe regulated sports betting would allow local economies to benefit from additional tax revenue and job creation. The American Sports Betting Coalition aims to educate, advocate, empower, and deliver those initiatives. For those seeking more information, go to sportsbettingamerica.com for all of the ongoing legalization efforts from the American Gaming Association and the American Sports Betting Coalition. Tonight's game, Payne Green Bay, 7-point favorite right now at betonline.ag.
We've seen this line swiftly move. You know, look ahead line was, 11.5 last week. We're now down to 7. And usually that's a sign that professional bettors are going to be looking the other way. That has not been the case. Despite the 4.5-point adjustment, professional bettors are going to be on the Bears tonight. Short week, familiar opponent. And usually what that means is an uber vanilla game plan. And it simply comes down to execution. And it's why a lot of these totals open up shorter than they usually would if it were played on a Sunday. That's somewhat factored into the market. These two opponents, though, when you start to look at Green Bay offensively, obviously this is probably a short number for Green Bay at home offensively. But when you talk about those offensive line issues, they haven't been as efficient, although Cobb coming back certainly is going to help. Chicago on the other side, it's a lot of just ground and pound. Glennon has not been great, although he's been mediocre, finding those short to underneath pass routes, which we know eat up a bunch of clock when they are completed. So this becomes, you know, blindly betting these things under on a short week with a familiar opponent. I don't love doing that, but that is certainly the professional side as well. I'm not sure I would be going full game over or full game under here if I were to bet this. Probably better to look first half, although I haven't done that either. This sucks because, and I kind of want to put this out there and just kind of as a tidbit of information, you have kind of grown with us over the last 4 years, and you have been accustomed to a way in which we navigate the market, and you guys seem to love it with the first half unders. Unfortunately, as we brought that to light more often, you can now see what the market is doing, and they're just not first half open at the time we record these on Thursday anymore. There's a reason for that. So it's made this a little bit more difficult to navigate for you guys, and well, for us, and then it affects you guys. So I don't want to get into the habit of constantly saying check the site, but I can tell you it's ugly, but I think the Chargers, going back to the Chargers well again, makes a bunch of sense. I have seen some professional money on the money line. That would be the way I would look. I just think this is the last ditch effort here. And I know a lot of people say, well, that was last week. When you start to break down that game, it was so right. It was frustrating. The defense was fantastic. It's one of the most underrated defenses in the league. It really... usually you don't see an Andy Reid offense get stalemated like that. And when you start to really break that down, you had two Phillip Rivers interceptions, which led to awesome field position for the Chiefs. Those weren't really earned scores. Lots of great field position. You had them hold to a field goal that was missed. You rough the kicker. You give them another crack at three. The first 17 points in that first half were all unearned. The second half, the defense was fantastic again. Finally, you know, it wore down when the game was over and you see Hunt break one, and all of a sudden, you know, you're looking at this box score with all these inflated numbers in it. You're looking at, you know, 24 total points. There wasn't a lot of earned stuff out there. So the defense has been fantastic. If we can get Phillip Rivers, and it doesn't even have to be fantastic Phillip Rivers, if we can kind of get him on the same page with Anthony Lynn, there is going to be opportunities to exploit that Eagle secondary. And like we alluded to a little bit, that spot, that situation, huge win against your division opponent, Giants, in walk-off fashion. You bang home a 61-yarder at the buzzer. Now you're traveling across the country. If the Chargers can't win here, and I kid you not, I won't look at a game the rest of the year. And that's something bad to say from a professional, because you want to be looking at all the games. You could tell me Jesus Christ himself is on the Chargers moving forward, and I am not going to bet them if they don't cover here. If they don't win here, that's it. Play them on the money line.
Yeah, if the Chargers don't do it for us this week, I'm not sure we're going to be able to back them going forward. They'll be on the do not fly zone. But in the meantime, we're advocating for the Chargers, preferably on the money line. Shop around, find $1.20. Should be widely available. T-shirts coming on the way. I know you sent me a picture. I think we had our first box arrive, or at least the, what's it called? I don't even know the best term. The samples have arrived?
No, those are legitimate. Now, I will say this so people don't get confused. We had a huge contingency, and we were shocked, and we were, you know, obviously when we did the T-shirt route last year, like, yeah, we're going to come up with some creative ones. Everyone was clamoring, and I guess this is the kind of people that listen to us. They said, hey, we want just a regular Bet the Board generic tee. Well, that's what you're going to get this year. I was actually hands-on with it this year. Last year, I, you know, had one of my guys do it. It didn't turn out very well. The quality wasn't good. We got bamboozled a little bit when we went tagless. They flip-flopped the T-shirts on us. So this year, it was kind of a hands-on approach. That's why it took a little bit longer. We got the logo tees in. They are going to be available for purchase. We sent it to our web team there. My hope is it's up some point today, maybe Friday. But I would think by the end of the week, or I'm, you know, you kind of know my personality here. Do your job.
I know. Trust me. I've worked with you for the last couple of years, and if people know what you said to me,
it's very simple.
Air,
just do your job. Those should be up no later than, I would hope, Sunday.
Take all those Charger winnings from Sunday, roll them into Bet the Board gear. Buy them for your wives. Buy them for your girlfriends, people you hate, your children.
They're very comfortable. I will say this. We spent a little more money on the quality of the shirts this year. They're fantastic. So the lady friend is going to absolutely be nabbing them and using them as the sleeping gear.
Outfit everybody you know in Bet the Board gear. Spread the word. Follow Dave Mason on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. Follow the podcast, Bet the Board Pod. You can follow Payne Insider there as well. And of course, I'm Todd Furman. You can find me on Twitter. Payne, any parting shots before we close up shop for another week? I know the calendar hasn't even hit October, and I feel like you and I are running on fumes already this season.
Oh, already on fumes. Yeah. I will say this.
It'd be a grind, huh?
I didn't look. Uh-oh. Yeah, it's a long grind. I can't wait for it to be over.
hopefully nobody caught that line.
The contest. You know, we had a lot of people that didn't fill out picks. We'll do a better job sending out an alert on game day. I mean, we send out a few. Hey, lines are out. Get in your picks. Saturday, get in your picks. We'll throw another alert up there on Sunday to get in your picks. I mean, the tail off from week one to week two, and I this isn't going to send me into a rant of society and our current standing of where we are, but I mean, you don't do well week one. You just quit. Like, there's freaking 4 months to go. My goodness. It stunned me. People are giving away free money here. Weekly prizes. And people aren't turning in their picks because they went 1-4 in week one. There's 4 months to go. You can do it. Don't be a quitter. I mean, it just drives me nuts.
Yeah, imagine how pissed people would be on this podcast if every week we picked a loser. Doesn't happen often. We just said, hey, we're going to take the next week off. We're not going to record a podcast to try and do that. So do your jobs. Fill out those picks. Take advantage of the weekly prize packs that are available. Even if you've started off slowly through the first 3 weeks and you don't think you'll get back into the mix for the big prizes, you can still take home the Visa gift card. You can still take home the Bet the Board t-shirt. A lot of good stuff out there. We appreciate all of you guys listening. Numbers continue to grow and surge, and that's a credit to everybody spreading the word. So share with your friends. Rate the podcast on iTunes. Retweet, favorite. Do all the things through social indicators. So, but for Payne Insider, I'm Todd Furman. Fingers crossed that come Monday morning, we're not back here ranting about the Chargers. They're going to make things right in the world. And Philip Rivers, he's going to take us to the window.